Okay, today is March 15th, 2018. This is an interview with Susan Carpenter. This interview is being conducted for our Academic Staff Award Winners Oral History Project. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. We're doing this interview in Union South. So Susan, to help me with sound quality, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Okay, Susan Carpenter, C-A-R-P-E-N-T-E-R.
All right, Susan, I'm just going to get this a little closer to you. You're fine. I just may need to project now a little bit. Okay, so I sent you a list of questions. We're just going to systematically go through those. May ask follow-up questions depending on how you respond. So, first question, what brought you to UW-Madison?
Well, the first time I came to UW-Madison was for graduate school, just right after my undergrad, and I was in botany plant ecology, and I got my master's in that department. Then was away from Madison for about 10 years, and then my husband, who's on faculty here, was offered a faculty job at Madison, so we came back.
Okay. So where was most of your work or research when you were in grad school? Where was it located on campus?
Well, our department was in Burge Hall, but we were plant ecologists, so my field work was on American ginseng, which is a native plant that's harvested. And at that time, the DNR was interested in having, they were deciding whether to have a season, when to start a harvesting season for it. It was considered a threatened species at that time. So basically, I did a life history study, ecology, and then some modeling on the effects of harvesting on ginseng populations. I interviewed and went out in the field with quite a few ginseng diggers and saw populations there. But my own field work was mostly in Columbia County, but scattered around. I had sites around in southern Wisconsin where I actually did my own studies of the plant and then made management recommendations to the DNR for that.
So it sounds like you did your graduate work here, but really it was out. I mean,
out in the field.
Was out in the field.
Field work, yeah, okay. Mostly. Well, the modeling you do with a computer. We, of course, had mainframe computers at that time, so we had to have our punch cards and carry those around. And I actually finished up my analysis. We had moved to the University of Notre Dame, and so I actually finished my analysis and my writing while I was down there.
I
just had my grant there.
Okay, great. So to back up a little bit, I assume back up a little bit, what factors led to your research and your work interests?
Well, this is probably, you always would hear this from pretty much everyone who's a field ecologist or a field biologist, that when they were children, they just loved being outside. So I was in that same category and spent a lot of time outside. And when I was in my undergrad, I was a biology major, and I took a lot of courses in that area, but I was also interested in education, like pretty much as long as I could remember. And so in college, I decided I wanted to find a way to bring the science together with education in my work throughout my future. And so really, in looking back on it, I think that I've been able to do that with pretty much every job that I've had, bring those two things together. So I've taught, and I've taught preschool, and I taught college, and I've had the job that I have now, which is gardening, but also there's a lot of teaching and outreach involved with it. So, and other jobs too, where it all kind of comes together.
Right. Well, let's jump into the job. So. I'm assuming you've been asked, but maybe not. So maybe this is the first time someone has asked you. When someone asks, to describe what you do, how do you describe that?
Well, I'm a native plant gardener, so I do a lot of gardening, but I don't do it alone most of the time. During the growing season, I work with about 60 to 70 community volunteers. Some are students from UW, some from other universities. Sometimes a mother and child, mother will bring her children and they also work in the garden with me. But mostly it's community volunteers. So we they contribute usually along the lines of 1,000 to 1,100 hours of volunteer work per season. And there have been hundreds of different individuals involved in the Native Plant Garden since I started working on it there. So it's real. We're gardening side by side, but we're also learning about all the plants, native plants. Of course, there's a lot more diversity than kind of a typical traditional landscaped area. So the plants are all blooming at different times. They're seedlings, or they're mature, or they're producing seed, or they're just in their leaf form. So there's a lot of things to learn, and which ones we're fostering and which ones we're not fostering is something that the volunteers will need to pick up pretty well. I also have a couple of students that I hire during the summer that work as employees, so they work in the garden along with the volunteers and along with me, and so they get to learn all those things too, but also work with the volunteers and learn a little bit, I think, about teaching and working with people in that context. I'm also an outreach specialist. That's my official position. So I do a lot of presentations, talks, tours, and then.
So I think you were sort of giving the overview of being an outreach specialist.
Of being an outreach person, yeah. So with the garden, there's a lot of that, just kind of information about plants. I mean, I write articles and I do. Presentations for outside groups of garden clubs and master gardeners and that kind of thing as well. So that takes up a lot of time. Then we've also, because of the garden and because of really just a chance sighting of a very rare bumblebee that was found there's like 7 years ago now, we began monitoring the bumblebees. And that has led to a whole nother aspect of my work in outreach, and it's actually because this rare bumblebee was listed just almost exactly a year ago as an endangered species at the federal level, that has brought up a lot more interest in bumblebees. Of course, pollinators in general are pretty of a lot of interest right now for the public and gardeners and people in general, but that project has kind of just grown and really become a large part of what I do. And it was really just based on a bee expert, a chance observation that he made. He took a picture, he sent the photo to us, he identified the bee, was surprised to see it here, and because it's so rare now over the previous range, or its original range, and he just sent the photo and asked if we'd seen any more of them, which we hadn't really been monitoring bumblebees. So now we have a really complete record of that bee from the Arboretum. There was a film project that was done, which got a lot of public professional filmmakers that got more national press. And then with the listing, just a lot more local interest, but also national interest. And we've been able to provide trainings for people who are interested in monitoring the bees. So for example, Fish and Wildlife Service needs to know a lot more about the distribution, and since you can identify this bee from photographs and some of the other bumblebees too, we if we have people all over the state who are monitoring it, we're picking up new locations, and then places of course where it's not found is going to become important too. So that's been a huge project. So then there's tours and talks and articles about that topic as well. And I do some plant IDs, like when people have photos they take of a plant they don't know, or advice about, I just had one this week about someone who was interested in creating they've got an area about an acre and a half and they're trying to create a savanna, or it is an overgrown savanna now. They're trying to restore it to better savanna vegetation. So just advice like that over the email or sometimes in person as visitors come to the gardens.
Okay. So maybe we should go out just a little bit, since we don't know who will listen to this and the context.
Sure.
What is the UW Arboretum?
Oh, great question. Well, the UW Arboretum is a 1,200-acre area here within Madison, and it's owned by the university. It was established or dedicated it was slightly smaller at the time of dedication, but that was 1934. And then it's enlarged now, or more purchases were made in the meantime, so it's 1,200 acres now. There are no more purchases to be made now. It's surrounded entirely by Madison, either by residential or commercial buildings, and the Beltline is kind of goes through it, because we have a section, a large section, I think 200 acres or more, to the south of the Beltline. And so the goal of the Arboretum really from the beginning was to create and to maintain and to restore the vegetation of Wisconsin. And so prairies, woodlands, savannas, wetlands, and that's the work that has been done. At the time, the land was a farm, very degraded farm with some of those other vegetation types also present on the property. But the planting of the prairie began in 1935, and that was the Curtis Prairie, what we now call the Curtis Prairie. And it was done by a lot of different methods. No one really knew how to plant a prairie from scratch. So a lot of different methods were tried, bringing sod from remnant prairies, seed, doing different mowing and haying, and then spreading seed. The initial work on using fire as a management tool on prairies and what effect that would have was done here. So names like Leopold was the research director at the outset. Longenecker, Galistel, all the kind of place names that we have at the Arboretum now were the people who were involved in that early work. What we know a lot about restoration in a little bit later time than the 30s was from John Curtis and his students, who went around Wisconsin sampling and studying all the different vegetation types, and the book Vegetation of Wisconsin from 1959, original publication, was based on that work. And there have been studies, periodic studies since then, at least two of them, that have gone back to the same sites and reflected on mm-hmm. the changes that have gone on since then. So the restoration work continues. I mean, right now we have very active restoration going on in some of the areas of the Grady Tract, which is to the south of the Beltline, and then up in the area more close to the visitor center and so forth. So the Arboretum has some other features too. Also in 1935, the area which is near the present visitor center, but of course there wasn't a visitor center then, was begun to be planted with horticultural plants. And that then, if you fast forward to today, is our horticultural garden that's right near the visitor center. And the native plant garden was started much, much later. The first plantings of that were really in 2002. And that was the native plant garden was designated when the building addition was put on, a building addition was added to our the original visitor center from the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And at that time, the 4 acres around the current visitor center, were designated as a native plant garden. And it was designed by Daryl Morrison, who's a landscape architect. And he designed it to represent the native plant communities of southern Wisconsin. Pretty regional focus. So we have prairie gardens, savanna gardens, woodland gardens, mm-hmm. some rain gardens that have wetland plants.
Okay, mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I think you've talked about this when I ask to describe what you do, but I do want to ask specifically, understanding that there may be no such thing as a typical day, but what sort of tasks might comprise a typical day?
Well, the typical day in the growing season, probably more fun to talk about, is to get in the morning, check in with the students. We kind of decide what our approach is. Our volunteers are usually working in the mornings because it's just a better time to be out there working. And then we're out gardening, and we move around to different areas. So we might be at a prairie garden one time. We might be planting. We might be at we might be weeding at a forest garden later on. We might be edging a savanna garden. There's just all the different tasks and all the different areas kind of call for different things at different times. So the typical day would be gardening, but what we're specifically doing would really vary depending on our priorities. And so we usually garden until about noon, and then we take a break in the middle part of the day, the hotter part of the day, and there might be tasks, there might be data tasks. Usually we do bumblebee surveys, which are photo surveys. So basically we're going around and taking pictures of bumblebees and sometimes other pollinators in the gardens, and that would be both in the native plant garden and maybe in the horticultural garden as well, and sometimes out on the prairie or just nearby areas. Sometimes we have a specific place that we want to answer a question about, or a specific plant that we're monitoring for its pollinator use, but sometimes we're out with a group and they're learning how to do the surveys. It just depends on what the goals are of that, you know, at that particular time. Usually later in the afternoon, we might do some, usually the students would be gone by then because they're usually working part-time and focused on the mornings. Later in the day, if there's meetings to be had, or if there's monitoring or a job that I would do myself that wouldn't involve volunteers, like hand mowing, you know, lawn mowing, that kind of thing. I don't do that when the volunteers are there, or when the camp kids are out in the garden. Mm-hmm. The garden is so close to the visitor center that it's really a high visitor area, and also our camps and our youth programs use it a lot because it's got a lot of variety in a small space, and it's accessible. And the you know, if they're not going on a long hike, they can, you know, they can do activities really close by and use the garden as a learning environment. So yeah, and then if I have any writing, all my email, that kind of thing, I do it during my own time. And I do have one evening gardening session. So that day, as evening gets, you know, as 5 o'clock draws around, I would be getting prepared for that and welcoming my volunteers to that session. Sometimes people who have like daytime jobs still want to do some gardening, so I do have an option for that if they're available then. So
okay.
A little cooler in the evening.
So what about the
winter
non-growing season?
The non-growing season is that will be any meetings or other. I do a lot of service and committee work at the Arboretum, so a lot of that would focus then. We have a winter enrichment lecture series. Today was the last day of that. That goes for 10 weeks, and so we, you know, I kind of help with some of the logistics for that and making coffee and hosting that event. So that's every week for half a day on Thursdays. I do a lot of my writing, preparing, and preparing talks. We have I'm going to a conference next week, so getting ready for that. Just grant writing, data work, that kind of thing. It's mostly computer work, if it's not meetings this time of year. A little bit in the winter, we do a little bit of pruning and some other, you know, just making sure everything's, you know, there's not tree branches falling down and that kind of thing outside. But I don't do a lot of gardening outside, and my volunteers are off duty. This winter we took, I'm helping with inventorying our archive room. This is a service project, and we have an archive room with some things that go all the way back to the 30s, and these materials need to get into safer storage. So probably be talking with you about the archives on a different conversation, mm-hmm. but we have really uncovered some fantastic pieces that need to be safer. So we're just doing an inventory now, and I have a couple of volunteers who are librarians, retired librarians, who volunteered to help with that project over just in the winter months. So they come in, I think it's 4 hours a week I have, I'm working with them to inventory all those materials. It's quite an assortment of things. Maps, slides, photos, notes, newsletters, field notebooks, planting records. I could go on and on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we thank you for doing that.
Well, it's pretty interesting, too.
So I want to talk a bit about, or I want to ask a question about technology.
Mm-hmm.
So how has it changed? How's it changed your work?
Wow. Well, In this job, there are some limits to what technology can do, because gardening is pretty much gardening, no matter what. However, the way that we can teach about identification, and then of course some of the, well, first I'll talk about identification. So it used to be that we would have to go get big heavy books and pore over things, and photography was not as useful a tool for, say, identification. But now, if someone emails me a photograph and it's a familiar enough plant, I can immediately link up to a number of informational sites and get information directly back to them. Sometimes someone will call with a description of a plant, and I can do it, I can identify it from the description. Mm-hmm. And then they might not have a photograph, but I can send photos back mm-hmm. to them and say, is this, you know, look for these characteristics, is this, does this square up with what you're, mm-hmm. so that makes things a lot easier. Sometimes people are still bringing in the baggie with the plant material, and, you know, I go from there. But I might not see them, so then I have to communicate back with them. It makes it much, you know, the technology, mm-hmm. just the simple technology of photography, resources online, and email makes that so much easier. For the Bumblebee Project, the way technology has really helped is, first of all, the Fish and Wildlife Service has a website that people can go to. You can look at the map that shows the distribution, as we currently have all the records, for positive records, for the Rusty Patch Bumblebee. And those, you know, I can send in, I can go out, do a survey during the growing season, and send in a record to Bumblebee Watch, and then that gets transferred to Fish and Wildlife, and then their mapping person puts it up on the Fish and Wildlife website. So those, you know, sort of in real time, this data can be uploaded, can be useful for, you know, where's an area that we're missing information, where should we send a group. And that's been helpful for a lot of the organizations who own land, manage land, what should we do. And so, you know, just communication in general has really helped. I mean, there's no substitute for pulling weeds. There's not a new technology for pulling weeds, mm-hmm. but I guess that, you know, the technology could help for helping us communicate and help people learn, well, what would be a weed in this context? What should we do? Mm-hmm. Is there a time when you see a plant and you're worried about panicking about it because it's everywhere, but is that a priority? Should you just, if you wait, will that plant not be a problem later, or if you pull it, will it just increase it? So lots of different things about communication and about practices can be communicated with basic communication tools, I think. And then, of course, technologically, I mean, the mapping and the data processing and those kinds of things, you know, that there's just, I mean, that, like I was saying at the beginning, with my first master's degree, I had a box of punch cards, and, you know, getting the information out of those was a lot different than what you can do now, just at the touch of a few mouse clicks.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
So
Digital photography, huge.
Right. So, to move from your work to academic staff, the first question is, have you been involved? Is it yes or no, obviously? Have you been involved in either academic staff governance or groups?
I have not. Okay. I have really not. And it was, when you sent the question, I was thinking about that. And I think what I've had two positions at the university as an academic staff member. So the gardening one is one of them. And then I was in the School of Education for a few years prior to going to the Arboretum. And in both cases, the Arboretum, of course, we're kind of physically removed, and I do a lot of field work. And I guess most of my service to the university has been within the unit that I have worked in. I mean, that's certainly true of the Arboretum since I've been there a long time, and I have a lot of different service roles there. In the School of Education, I was working on research grants there in education research, and we were actually out in the schools a lot of the time. So it had this real practical field component to it too, but we worked in the Verona schools, and I would say I don't think it was 50-50, but there were weeks when it was more time in the Verona schools than in the office because of the work that we were doing there. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the classroom with teachers where we had done curriculum development together, professional development workshops, and so forth. And then I was actually in the classroom studying the teaching and learning in real time. So I think that's probably why I was in that project for quite a few years, but as a staff person only for 3 years, because I got my master's in science education at that time. So
it appears that a running theme for you is that your work doesn't necessarily involve just being in the office.
Not at all. No. That never has been the case.
Do you think that's been purposeful?
Yes, I think so. Well, it's always been interesting to me to have work I think it all has a really strong like conceptual basis, but it also has a very strong field and applied basis. So whether it was the school or whether it was the garden, that's the way, you know, that's the place where the learning and the teaching and the, you know, the kind of the people side is happening. So, I guess that is pretty much it.
So I don't know how much this pertains to you, but a question that I ask Academic Staff Award winners is the relationship between faculty and staff.
Oh, well, yeah, I've always found it to be, I guess compared to some staff, perhaps I feel that I understand the faculty perspective maybe better than some people do, because I'm married to a faculty member. I've been married to a faculty member for almost 40 years. So I think I understand that perspective, you know, kind of what's involved in a faculty, you know, what makes faculty members tick, at least based on him and on some of the other people, you know, obviously friends and that kind of thing. But I've always had a good relationship. I mean, at School of Education, we worked with, faculty, of course, are people applying for the grants, but a research group is a thing that's a team, and it doesn't, you know, you can't, like, just have one or two parts of the team. You know, the graduate students are there, staff people are there, the faculty are there, and everyone kind of comes together and has a, has their own role in the enterprise, and it doesn't really work if you're missing some of those pieces. So one example from that job was the faculty members, we were working in schools, of course, so the human subjects aspect of working in schools with children, and this was some years ago, so I'm sure it's even more complicated now, is you have to do a lot of, you know, the consent, everything has to be T's crossed, I's dotted, everything has to be completely, you know, done correctly. And I think sometimes the faculty would think, well, this is just so, you know, like, it's kind of inconvenient, and would we, you know, we really have to go through all these steps and all. That's why you have your staff to, like, make sure that all that is done. You know, you don't have to worry about it. Like, let's just make sure everything's, you know, perfect for something like that. At the Arboretum, we've had, I've served there under four directors so far, and the first director was more of an administrative person, a garden administration person, not a faculty member. And then after that, we had faculty, a decision was just made to have faculty, the director be a faculty member. But it's an interesting situation because they are a faculty member who has a department, but they are it's pretty much a full-time job out there as director. So, you know, we're off campus. We have a faculty advisory or a faculty board, the Arboretum Committee. They're not advisory so much as, or they're not policy making, they're advisory. So they meet periodically and, you know, faculty concerns can come up, you know, on research in particular, as we're a research center, so research in particular is something the faculty are, you know, really leading the way on. But we have a professional staff as well, so, you know, I'm more on a day-to-day basis, I'm more interacting with academic staff. We have university staff as well who do, who are really our, mostly our outdoor crew that are doing the, you know, the land care and managing the restorations and so forth. So I think it's, at the Arboretum, we don't have as strong of a day-to-day relationship, or at least in my unit, I don't. Although we collaborate with entomology, because of the Bumblebee Project. We collaborate with botany and, you know, other. And so I know, you know, because I was here at UW a long time ago, I mean, there are professors in botany who, like, well, Don Waller is one of the professors of botany, and he was on my first master's committee. So, I mean, you know, like, some of the people you just know from, like, years and years ago. And so you have interactions with them.
Okay.
I know sometimes it's there's some, like, tension in that kind of relationship, but I've never found that to be an issue, really. I've always found it very collegial and...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Valuable.
Next question is about a specific event in, you know, U.S. and world history and your memories of that, and that was your memories of September 11th, 2001.
Yeah. Well, I was working in the School of Education that morning and got into the office, I think. I usually bust into campus and got to the office. I was in the office that morning and some people were just arriving and we had monitors in the, you know, monitors. We did a lot of video work, so there were monitors there. And so someone had turned on the, you know, I guess, I don't know how we actually knew there was something going on, but somehow the monitors were on. So we were watching and we had a couple there who were visiting from, one thing I particularly remember about it, were visiting from Russia. Just the woman was a very, very accomplished child psychologist. And so they were on sabbatical visiting and they were in the office that morning, and the woman when she first came in, she didn't know what was going on. She had just gotten off the phone with her mother because September 11th is this visiting scientist's birthday. And so she'd had this very warm conversation with her mother, and she came in and we were all watching, you know, and by this time the planes had already hit and then the buildings were about to collapse at that time. So, you know, everyone was riveted to it, and she was just, I mean, this couple that was the visiting from Russia were just beside themselves, I mean, with what was going on. Just didn't know, you know, none of us, of course, knew what was going on, and it was terrible, but that's what I remember about it. I'm sure we didn't get very much work done that day, I'm like probably everyone else.
Right. Do you remember any of the immediate aftermath? By that I mean, you know, the next few days or weeks, either for your work or for you personally?
Well, I think we were all just badly shaken, and it was the beginning of the school year, so I don't know whether I had any, I wasn't in classrooms probably that early in the year. I don't really recall any, you know, I think we had to keep going with our work, but to this day, I'll never forget Galena's birthday, and actually it's been very nice because I've stayed in touch with them all these years, and so I always send her an email on her birthday, and also her husband's birthday is not as easy to remember a date, but still.
Thank you. A couple more things. So the story behind receiving the award. So the first question is, did you know that you were nominated?
Well, I knew I was nominated because they asked for a CV and a list. I think I had to give a list of, like, my accomplishments of that year, which was sort of like part of your performance review, but I don't remember the timing. I think it was right around the end of the year, so I just had my list of, you know, things, different documentation of that year. So yeah, so I knew that I was nominated, but I was surprised, and of course to win that award is really humbling, and I was really glad that 7 of my colleagues could come to the award ceremony, and I was able in 2 minutes I didn't name any names, but I did it by roles to talk about the edit, you know, when there's an article, there's a good editor behind it. When there's an event, there's a professional who's doing the setup. When there's, you know, and just all the different roles of the people who were my closest colleagues. But that wasn't, you know, there's lots of other people who, you know, we all have to support each other in our work, and my students, and I've supervised, I think it's 65 students now at the Arboretum, because for a few, well, about 7 years, we didn't have a ranger. We lost the ranger position, the staff ranger position, so the director at that time asked me if I would fill in and supervise the student rangers during that time, and that turned into kind of another part-time job, but it was added on to what I was already doing. But that was fun. I supervised a lot of students in that time besides my gardening students. So I really like working with the students and seeing them develop and watching them learn and mature in the different roles that they have. And like the ranger position was they have to work in teams, but they also have to be really on their toes about different things that could happen there. You can imagine at a visitor center, anything can happen on the grounds, and they have to be, you know, do all the routine things, but they also have to be ready for whatever happens. Mm-hmm. And so I, you know, it's interesting to see them grow in those jobs, and then what they do when they go on. It's just fabulous to keep in touch with them and learn what they're doing out in the world afterwards. So sometimes they'll come back for a job reference years later to a job, and then I, you know, kind of keep track of where they're going.
Mm-hmm. So one more question in two parts, and then I'll give you space, at least a couple minutes, if you have things you want to say.
Okay.
So the last question is about legacy. So, and it's what do you feel you'll be remembered for, and is that what you want to be remembered for?
Well, I think at the Arboretum, I think I'll be remembered for getting the native plant garden going. I wasn't the first gardener for the native plant garden, but the first gardener was there for the 2000 season, and then she left in the winter, the following winter. So I was really grateful when I got to the Arboretum in the spring of 2003. She had made the plant order that I would need for 2003, And so I came with that, but that was very early in the garden's development. It was basically we had one area was planted, and the trees and shrubs were in the whole area, but one area as far as the herbaceous planting. So we had a lot of planting to do, like years of planting to do. So I think I'll be remembered for being a big part of the native plant garden. I think I'll be remembered for being a big part of the Bumblebee Project, and that's turned out to be, I mean, the Arboretum is well known nationally now for being like the longest in recent times, the longest record, the most continuous record, and a real center for outreach for this endangered bumblebee. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. And I think the students that I've worked with and the teachers that I worked with in the School of Ed prior to this, I think I'm still in touch with some of them. I think they found our work together really useful in their careers, and I hope I'll be remembered for that. And I think my colleagues now, there's probably quite a few of them that I hope would say the same thing about the work that we're doing now.
So I want to give you, we have a couple minutes, mm-hmm. So is there anything that you'd like to say about your time on campus, either graduate school or now working at the Arboretum, mm-hmm. while we have the recording going?
Yeah. Well, I really love Wisconsin. I mean, I love it as a university, not just because I went to school here and my family's had a very, my husband's had a great career here. Our son graduated from UW. But it's just the university, the collaborative spirit here, the Wisconsin idea. So when you ask me, I'm usually, in my jobs, I'm usually not in the office. I didn't start out thinking that my career embodied the Wisconsin idea, but in some ways it has, and that I'm just really proud of that and really happy that we have the Wisconsin idea to, be our North Star.
Hmm. Well, I think that's a nice place to stop.
Okay.
So, Susan, thank you very much for your time. This concludes the Oral History with Susan Carpenter.